This is James R. Copeland, the director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute, and it's my pleasure to welcome Ilya Shapiro, who's a senior fellow in constitutional studies at the Cato Institute and the editor-in-chief of the wonderful Cato Supreme Court Review. Ilya, wanted to talk to you again about Arizona v. United States. We talked when this case was argued, and now the court just came down with a decision today. Came down with a holding. This is the immigration law in Arizona, commonly called SB 1070, based on the original Senate bill. What did the court decide today?
Well, there were four provisions at issue here. That's something to keep in mind. This isn't just a yay or nay, what Arizona is doing is okay or not. First of all, most of the law has been in effect since July 2010. The government didn't even challenge most of the law, and it lost on a few provisions. There are four provisions here before the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court upheld one and struck down two, partially affirming, partially reversing the lower court, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal. So let's just run through them. First, the one it upheld was perhaps the most controversial one. This is ironic, perhaps. The one that when a law enforcement officer lawfully detains or arrests someone and they have probable cause to believe that they're in the country illegally, they are required to verify their immigration status. The court said that the devil will be in the details of this one, meaning how it's applied, how the law is construed by state courts. But on its face, it does not conflict with federal law. Indeed, it promotes federal law, and the states are Arizona is acting within its power to pass that. Next, we have a provision making it a state crime to violate a federal alien registration law, that is, immigrants, legal immigrants and tourists and different people need to register. There's certain paperwork and electronic verification and so forth. And Arizona said, well, if you violate that federal law, you're also violating state law, and there's a state punishment attached to that. The court said no, and indeed six of the justices agreed on that point. Of the eight, Kagan is recused, so we're talking about eight justices here. They said no because the federal registration law is complete. We can't have states adding to it, not even just adding a state punishment without adding other elements of the crime for that's allegedly being violated. Next, there's a law that penalizes illegal aliens who seek work or are independent contractors. And by a vote of 5-3, the court struck that down because Congress legislated in IRCA, the 1996 immigration law, to penalize employers, but not employees who are involved in this employment relationship where an illegal alien is being employed. And they considered and rejected having sanctions against employees or would-be employees. And therefore, that's not something that the court said, the majority said, that states can get into. And finally, the last section under consideration allows for warrantless arrests when an officer has probable cause to believe that someone has committed a deportable offense. So, they see someone who they either know has done something somewhere else, or they see him doing something wrong, and they suspect they have probable cause to believe that he's in the country, or that he's deportable. They had warrantless authority to arrest. The court said no because local officials don't have that sort of training. Indeed, a lot of deportability or removability cases make it to the Supreme Court. These are not easy things that should be left to the discretion or judgment of local and state law enforcement. So that was, again, a 5-3 decision. Some interesting dissents here. So Justices Thomas, Scalia, and Alito all wrote separate partial dissents. Justice Scalia would have upheld all of these provisions. He wrote kind of a sweeping and very interesting, in typical Scalia-style opinion, talking about state sovereignty and how states are indeed sovereign. This isn't just lip service that we pay in our federal system. And what is sovereignty if not being able to control people who aren't supposed to be there? And it's a very kind of sweeping, grandiose language, but also looking at, well, look, this is the language that Congress employed. This is the language that Arizona employed. This is just exercising their sovereign capacity. Justice Thomas concurred separately, or wrote partially concurred separately, partially dissented, saying he too would have upheld the entire law, but that's because he doesn't believe in implied preemption at all. Unless Congress said the states cannot has laws, for example, penalizing illegal aliens who seek employment or are independent contractors, then that type of law is not preempted. There's no sort of such thing, according to Justice Thomas, of field preemption, meaning that the Congress has occupied the field even if they haven't regulated a particular activity, or implied preemption, or a purposes and objectives preemption. This is another way that it's sometimes termed, that a state law conflicts with the purposes and objectives of federal law. He says, no, that's not the way that we should decide these things. And finally, Justice Alito has a more nuanced view. He would have upheld three of the provisions, the one that was upheld and two others, and would have let kept struck down the alien registration one that I mentioned. And he goes into various reasons, kind of another technical analysis. I mean, at the end of the day, both sides are obviously going to be spinning this in their favor. Arizona is going to say, look, most of our law is already in place, and this most controversial one, the so-called your papers please thing that was demagogued, you know, it's legal, it's constitutional. On the other hand, the administration is going to say, well, look, we prevailed on three of the four. This is clearly a slap in the face at Arizona and all these other states that are taking the law into their own hands and what have you. But really, it's a mixed message on the law, and it's very technical. For other states that have similar laws, that gives them guidance about those. But there are other types of provisions that other states, South Carolina, Alabama, Georgia, Utah has tried a novel Utah-specific guest worker program. You know, you can get inklings at what the court might say about that. But just like some people were over-predicting based on last year's case that upheld Arizona's certain types of business regulations relating to employment of illegals and use of the E-Verify, the federal electronic social security number verification system. They were saying, oh, well, the court upheld that 5-4, then that means they're going to uphold this 5-4. You can't do that in preemption analysis, whether you're talking about immigration or anything else. You really have to look at the technical statutory language of the state law and the federal law. I mean, the broader point here is simply that immigration, real immigration law, not just tinkering around the edges with little crimes or little tweaks to things, the authority of state law enforcement and so forth. The real immigration reform has to come from Congress, from the lawmaking capacity of the federal government. Immigration is a national issue and requires a national solution. States simply are not capable, practically or legally, in dealing with it. And so if there's one big takeaway from this case, is that immigration will continue to be a front burner issue, both in our election campaigns, heating up here in the summer and into the fall, and in future. You know, states really don't have much leeway if the federal government is falling down on the job, either from the legislative or the enforcement perspective.
Interesting. And so it's clear that I think what I'm hearing is you're saying from a policy perspective, Congress needs to get in here. And that's really what's constitutionally required if we accept the court at face value here. I do think that the court here differed, as I understand it, from what you had said previously. You thought the court would do or should do. When we spoke before, you were pretty much, I think, saying three of these would survive. I'm not sure they're the same three as Justice Alito thought should survive. And in fact, only one of them survived. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think they were close calls, but that's right. I was saying both in terms of my objective analysis, I was saying that three should survive. The one that I had doubts about was the sanctions of employees the Congress had already determined that only employers were to be sanctioned. Alito, he was okay striking down that one, but not okay with the registration one. He was okay with letting that one go, but striking down the state crime for violating federal registration laws. But really, these are all close technical calls. I mean, coming out of argument, I said objectively, I thought three or four should stand. Coming out of argument, I thought two, maybe three would stand.
Right.
I was a little wrong on that. Luckily, I don't get paid on my precise prediction.
And they were all contested. I mean, those three provisions that were enjoined, it was 6-2 or 5-3 on all of them. The only one where there was unanimity was the rather controversial sort of show me your papers 2B section, and that's the one where all justices believe that survived, right?
That's right, and that's very interesting. I mean, it wasn't a complete win. They still said, well, we'll see where the rubber meets the road in terms of future cases or how state courts in Arizona might interpret that in a way that makes it too broad, and
right.
There could be some future case where it merits cabining or something. But yes, on its face, there was unanimity, or at least, you know, 8 justices, Kagan being recused, right. 8-0, with that being okay.
Fantastic. Well, Ilya, it's been my pleasure to host you here again at the Manhattan Institute, Center for Legal Policy and pointoflaw.com. Again, this is James R. Copeland, Director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute, with Cato Institute Senior Fellow and Editor of the Supreme Court Review, Ilya Shapiro. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.